students to get and to learn about the biodiversity, and also to have homestay experiences to learn about the local culture. Today, however, I'm talking about something completely different and related to that, and this was introducing some teaching methods that I have learned to use, and if you successfully do online teaching, and to introduce them into something where they haven't been used a whole lot before. And so looking primarily at adult learners in an extension-based course. Traditional teaching. How many people in here teach in this method? The lectern in front of you and students out in the audience? Most everyone. And that has been the mainstay of teaching for many years. That's what I was used to, and when I go into a classroom, like one of our previous speakers presented, we're not taught necessarily how to teach oftentimes. We're not taught on teaching methods. We are given a PhD and sent into a classroom and told good luck. At least that was my experience. And to this day, we still teach like we were taught. And so this is a good image, and I think if you look closely, I find it kind of funny. We have one individual sleeping here, and we have a course now with technology and Wi-Fi, most of our students playing on the internet. Some hopefully are using it for good, but most of them are probably on Facebook, let's be honest. When we look at the teaching method, it's been shown that this isn't really an effective teaching method for especially adult learners. It's not interactive. It doesn't really maximize critical thinking, analytical skills. Promotes inexpressiveness and doesn't foster self-confidence. And these are some of the exact same things that our industry, that our clients want out of our students. So we need to kind of focus on that. So when we look at traditional teaching, first thing, redefining the role of the instructor. And this is something that I kind of had to face head on as an online educator. As much as it pains me to say, and I've had to say this before, people coming into our classrooms right now, our freshmen, have never known a world without internet, or high-speed internet at that. And I date myself when I ask students, you guys don't know what dial-up is? And there was a viral video on YouTube of students hearing that sound of the dial-up that we all know. And that's a horrible sound. Why would it do that? And so what I'm trying to say, and I guess what this means, is that to our students, what are we? You know, as professors, we came here. I was the holder of all knowledge. They came seeking that. And that's not necessary anymore. Dr. Google can answer anything in a matter of seconds, let's be honest. And so it really starts to call into question, what is the role of the instructor? And again, this is something that I've faced as an online educator. A lot of my counterparts, and again, a lot of the online stuff that I do, focuses and changes the shift from students coming in to me as the holder of knowledge, to me being the mentor, the guide, showing them how to find information, to know what credible information is. Nothing probably irks me as bad as a student citing Wikipedia or YouTube as a peer-reviewed resource. And so using these and identifying that, bringing in Socratic and experiential learning, and this is something, again, I've done online. And so I want to talk about what these methods are and then talk and give an example of some implementation of this in a face-to-face extension course that we recently offered. Socratic teaching is nothing more than a dialogic teaching, having discussion peer-to-peer. And this is something that worked very well with our extension course where we had adult learners, a lot of the individuals in our course, and I'll talk about that in a few more minutes, have a lot of experience, have skills. And so having the discussion peer-to-peer was very helpful since our students in this course often had varied experience of varied viewpoints. This builds knowledge upon prior knowledge, and again, the instructor serves as a mentor, a guide, guiding the conversation and helping them learn with that peer-to-peer style learning. Experiential learning. Most of us probably do this, especially when it comes to our laboratories in our courses, where we actually get our students to have hands-on relationships with the materials. It's almost like having a child or a young adult. I have a young son, and not talking yet, but many of my colleagues have teenage sons and daughters, and say, you know, when I tell them something, they don't listen to me. But when their teacher tells them, their friend tells them, they listen to them. And our industry was saying the same thing. You know, we go into and we teach these people things and try to get them to understand concepts. But if we can back that up with hands-on experience to reinforce that, that knowledge will end up being retained much further, and I think the analytical or critical thinking skills associated with that are reinforced. So, implementation. We're lucky enough to have a very active industry that comes to our research center. Our research center is north of here, about 30 minutes or so. And they came to us saying, we need to have our plant production technicians come to your institution and learn some skills, basic skills, things that we take for granted as far as sanitation or planting depth or fertilization. We really need to focus on those particular skills for this group. And so we came up what we call the Fundamental Commercial Plant Production Techniques course. And because we're scientists, we have to have abbreviation for that. 6-week program. The industry did not want to dedicate and send their employees off for a long period of time, but they said 3 hours a week we can do. So we decided to have a 1.5-hour traditional lecture, Socratic, set up, and then ship them right to a laboratory to have hands-on to reinforce that week's components. The goal, broadly, was to provide plant production technicians with basic knowledge and understanding of fundamental plant production techniques. Specifically, some of those goals include to be able to identify plant structure and functions. This is, again, something we take for granted. Many of the industry managers or the bosses would say, you know, node, internode, but oftentimes a lot of these technicians didn't necessarily know what those terms were and were afraid and hesitant to ask. To be able to explain the concept in pH and its importance on plant production. Many of the individuals knew what pH was, and if pH is high, I add this, and if pH is low, I add that, but not really understanding what pH was. And so when they saw a plant or had a situation where it was outside what they knew what to do, they weren't able to analyze that to come to a solution to meet that need. To be able to identify nutrient deficiency symptoms, demonstrate techniques to ensure proper production sanitation. This was a major pet peeve of our industry, as was related to us as the faculty. Simple things that the workers could not understand because they could not see or relate to some of these small structures or fungus. If they didn't see it, it wasn't there until it was too late and they had multiple benches that were infected. And lastly, to describe greenhouse systems and environmental influences on plant production. And this was something where workers were coming from one greenhouse to another, changing employment with different structures, different crops, and not understanding the relationship of why they're changing their practices for that greenhouse, for that structure, or for that crop. Our first class was offered in February of this year. We had, this is basically the brief demographics. We had slightly more female than male students. A majority of the students were between 26 and 35 years of age. Most of them in the 1 to 9 years of experience. Spanish speakers. This is something that I don't think we have addressed here in the state of Florida as well as we probably should have. A majority of our workers are from Latino backgrounds. Many of them do not speak English or very little English. With these students, we asked employers to send those that only speak English for this first time we were offering it, since we didn't have a translator. But I had a feeling that they would probably send people that weren't comfortable with English. And so in the class, on the first day, I had a coworker that was fluent in Spanish sit in the back, and after I introduced the course, I said, well, we have a speaker or somebody helping in the back, and if you prefer, go over to that person. About a third of our class instantly got up and moved. And so we weren't addressing it. And so the next time we're offering this course, we're going to have more materials, well, all the materials, both in English and Spanish, to try to meet our target audience. I don't think we've addressed that well enough. And you can see here that when I asked the students as far as the preferred style of learning, a vast majority of them actually wanted more hands-on, more of that interactive. They didn't want just someone coming here, I'll talk to you for 2 or 3 hours, I'll send you back. That's not what they wanted. And as an adult learner, that's not how they learn. Basic breakdown of the class, first week was plant parts and functions, followed by substrates, compaction, fertilizers, then moved on to nutritional monitoring diagnosis, environmental controls, plant pests and sanitation, and lastly, worker safety. So we had a really broad range of topics that we had to really condense into a short time period over 6 weeks to try to cover. These are some images from the course. In the upper left, you can see where we have some traditional lectures and some Socratic peer-to-peer discussions in the classrooms. And this was really one of the more interesting parts for me. This was the first time I had taught an extension course. I was used to teaching traditional undergraduate and graduate students. And the amount of discussion that we had was wonderful and really easy because these people came with a lot of experience and, hey, you know, we do it this way in our place, and why do you do it that way? And it was also educational for me to get a better understanding of what was really happening in some of our clientele, their production facilities. We had laboratories in the right-hand image where, you know, I tell them we have fungal structures and fungal spores, and if they can't see them, again, they must not exist. And so forcing the students to identify them, look for them, and then see them really help reinforce the comment that we're not lying to you. These things really are there, and we can prove it. And in the bottom left image, we did not tell them which materials were infected and which were not. And so simple things like cleaning the utensils before making cuttings, before pruning back your plant materials, we sent them out and said, okay, we want you to purposely do it wrong. We want you to purposely do it right, and we're not going to even tell you which ones are infected and which ones aren't. And let's just do an experiment. And our industry thought this was great because we're inviting them to screw up purposely for the purpose of demonstration and learning, and it's better that we do it on a few plants than their entire greenhouse. And so these are some of the examples. In the upper right-hand image, you can see where fungal pathogen completely obliterated that plant within a week. And the left-hand image, one of our growers, or several of them, had issues with planting depth. So again, we purposely told our students, please, plant them too deep. We want to see what happens. And in the lower right, this was an example of where the pruners were not sterilized before moving on to plant material. And obviously the plants on the right had succumbed to fungal infection. We did pre-test and post-test with this group and asked them 5 to 10 questions each week. And these questions were along the lines of, you know, do a pour-through test to determine EC and pH before applying materials? Do you clean the pruners before moving on to plant materials? Do you scout for infection? And so using the Likert scale 1 to 4 in the blue, and these are our pretest results, with always and sometimes being a good thing and rarely and never not being a good thing. And slightly skewed to the left, which is a good thing, and then after our courses, a significant shift to always and sometimes. So it really helped reinforce the students were learning value to what we were teaching them and providing reasons why we do these things and your bosses recommend these procedures. This class was only offered, except once previously. It'll be offered again soon here in the next couple of weeks. The industry has demanded to have this at least twice a year and even requested to have an advanced level course. Upon receiving their clients or their employees back, they were really pleased with the turnaround, with some of the work that they did and the improvement in performance. When we have enough students and we've set out, again, these questionnaires, the pretest and post-test and demographics, we hope to start kind of teasing apart correlations, hopefully, between some of the demographics, some of the learning style preferences and responses. The students did indicate, both before and especially after the course, that they really liked the mixture of learning and that it was different than what they had seen previously or experienced previously, where it was just coming to class and someone was lecturing, just having discussion, having hands-on, making it a more interactive environment. And again, this is something I've seen with online teaching and even some live teaching. And so this worked very well in an extension program in my experience. Lastly, just some of the feedback that came from this. One of the best stories, we have one of the individuals that graduated in this class that is telling a very knowledgeable worker, was telling his boss he was doing it incorrectly. He goes, my boss keeps telling me to do this incorrectly. I've been doing it correctly for a long time, but he does not believe me. And so he took the printouts and the handouts with his course back to his boss, and his boss finally actually did change his procedure and let him do it. And so those kind of things were good, and he felt really empowered because it also gave him some a way to stand up to his boss. And his boss did later joke around with me and told me that his employee came up to that, and he was glad that he stood up to him on that one and corrected him. But anyhow, this has been a really successful program thus far, and I would really highly recommend using these teaching methods in traditional extension courses just due to the responses that we received at the University of Florida with this course. And so with that, I'll be happy to answer a question too. Yes, sir.
Did they pay for it?
They did. This course was, we charged them $199 to pay for the fees, supplies, materials, and that kind of got the ball rolling as we didn't have any funds to put forward into this. Yes, sir.
Did you have any way to judge their degree of training in jobs that they typically perform, not so much whether they were knowledgeable about good and bad practices, but just what kind of training are they doing?
Varied. And that was the thing that surprised me. I am spoiled with having really good undergrad and grad students that are very similar when they come in. They have chem, they have bio, they have soils. Here I was dealing with really a diverse audience at that, and so we didn't assess the different training at the different businesses, but that would be a very interesting thing to look at and try to quantify.
And could that be a follow-up benefit of having taken the course? I come back with some training materials in the jobs that we are typically doing.
And I think that's one of the things that the employers are trying to see and really want is some of those materials to come back and also have those individuals be advocates and trainers at those individual production facilities. Yeah. I'll take one more question here. Yes, sir.
Interesting down the road, look at return on investment, see if you can actually capitalize on dollars, benefit, losses, productivity losses,
And that is without a doubt the thing that motivated this and really precipitated this. I went out and met with the growers. I asked them what their problems were, the bosses and managers, and then I asked them to please leave so I could talk to their employees. When I was walking with one of the producers in our area, he looked at one bench and said, they weren't being careful with sanitation. This one bench was $5,000 loss. I've got 10 of these right here. So when I asked him, I said, well, would you be willing to send your employees at $199 an individual? He said, certainly. If I could save just one bench, it pays for itself right then and there. But yeah, that would be an excellent thing to try to quantify as well, to add benefit back to this as well. Oh, yes. Thank you.